The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, August 2018, Volume 20, Number 8, and this is the fourth of five installments of the August issue. On this month's cover, Oprah stands on the deck of a ship, and she's leaning against the white rails. Her ruffled, flowing, pale aqua floral dress matches the aqua sea in the background, and the big white O for Oprah Magazine sits on a cool coral rectangle in the upper left-hand corner. And let's start this fourth installment off with from the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, advice from Martha Beck. And her column this month is called Plot Twist. A restless bookstore owner longs to start a new chapter. In the first installment of a three-part series, Kate Glenn tells her story to O Life coach Martha Beck. For 12 years, Kate Glenn has owned a children's book and toy shop in the charming town of Northampton, Massachusetts. Kate says, quote, "It's a great life, but it's the life I thought I'd have in retirement. I came here for college and just fell into children's retail after graduation. I've been in a holding pattern ever since," end of quote. The 36-year-old has been asking her gut for guidance, and it's giving her the silent treatment. Glenn says, quote, "I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I wish I could see the school guidance counselor," end of quote. Clearly, it's time for a chat with Martha Beck, guidance counselor for adults. Let's drop in on their first section. Martha. "Hi, Kate. Owning a children's bookshop sounds like a dream, but you're not finding it so dreamy." Kate. "Some parts of it are. I feel at home here, and I like helping kids. I majored in child and family studies, which is how I wound up working at the store. And when I graduated, the owner was selling it, which seemed like a sign. But numbers aren't my jam. I am not a retailer." Martha. "Who are you then?" Kate. "I'm an educator. We sell baby wraps, and I love teaching parents how to wear them. Touch is the first way you communicate with your baby, and a wrap lets you have constant contact but leaves your hands free. I also enjoy giving customers advice about gifts." Martha. "It's interesting that your answer isn't about how you feel. It's about how you can serve, which is beautiful. But I'm sensing that you tend to steer away from your discontent. You're talking rapidly, and if there's a lot of beta wave activity in your brain, intellectual, articulate, but not still. And that's not a criticism. I'm sensing you're anxious about this process." Kate. "I am, because it's new, and now I'm about to cry. My emotions come out as tears, whether I'm nervous or happy or sad. So yeah, I don't know what to do with my life. It's going well enough." Martha. "But it isn't, actually." Kate. "No, my career's only part of it. I don't have a partner, and I want a family. I'd have a bigger dating pool in a larger city, but I don't want to move. It's funny, the women in my family told me I could do anything, but meeting a partner is something I can't force." Martha. "Honey, you can feel the tension in your upper chest and throat, can't you?" Kate. "Yes." Martha. "Your sympathetic nervous system is on alert. It evokes the fight or flight response, which is the opposite of the part of the nervous system that falls in love. That's the parasympathetic nervous system, which puts you in tend and befriend mode, where you're calm and open. To find love, you need a little, I'll call it magic. But it's just the ability to use your energy to connect with what you want. And the things you want can't be gained by trying. Does that make sense?" Kate. "A lot of sense." Martha. "You must come from a family of hardworking perfectionists, women who say, don't cry, do something." Kate. "To the nth degree. True Boston WASPs for generations." Martha. Our task is to differentiate your natural self from the self your culture has trained you to be. That's why you cry when you're emotional, not because you're weak, but because a part of you has been locked out. Kate, I was always the super responsible kid, and in college, stuff forced me to grow up even more. Martha, can you talk about that? Kate, originally I went to school in Maine, but I got ulcerative colitis and spent 2 months in the hospital. The next year, my dad got cancer and died a few months later. My parents separated when I was 10, and I was looking forward to having an adult relationship with him, but I never got the chance. A couple of months after that, my mom had a massive stroke. I'm so grateful that she survived, but her brain's been rewired. She's not the woman who raised me. I took a break, then came to Northampton to go to Smith. I lived off campus, so I never had the traditional college experience. I love belonging, which is why this community means a lot to me. Martha, when you talked about the terrible things that happened, could you feel your energy getting calmer? Kate, I did. Martha, then when you talked about community, you began speaking quickly again, moving from your heart and back into your head. I have a friend with ulcerative colitis, and she was a fountain of beta wave energy. But once she learned to be still, her symptoms disappeared. I know that sounds woo-woo, Kate. I don't think so. When I got out of the hospital, I did biofeedback therapy for a while to calm my nervous system. That intense, agitated energy is what my acupuncturist calls running piglet chi. I can't get rid of it. Martha, I'm guessing running piglet chi plagued you long before the colitis. You were being a super responsible kid as your family fell apart and probably lived with elevated levels of stress hormones until your colon gave out. And after the hospital, you worked on training your brain out of its fretful patterns, but then bang, you lost your father and essentially your mother too. Have you really relaxed since then? Kate, I'd say no. Martha, even pre-verbal babies may sense their caregiver's tension and on some level believe they've created it. That could have been true for you. I think subliminally, you made a connection between I relaxed and look what happened to my parents. Now you associate relaxation with trauma. As soon as you let your guard down, you lost your mom and dad. We need to bring you to a state of self-compassion so you can relax, and we need to do it repeatedly until you realize disaster won't strike. I bet you're sitting there thinking, I have to get this relaxation thing right. Kate, yes, I want to say, just tell me what I have to do to calm down. Martha, have you ever tried meditation? Kate, not on a long-term basis. Martha, I want you to try a meditation called Vipassana. For 15 minutes a day, you'll sit with no distractions. Breathe and just describe to yourself what you're feeling physically and emotionally. Initially, you'll panic, but imagine holding yourself like a baby. What would you do with a panicking baby? Would you yell? Kate, no, I'd keep holding her. Martha, we're strapping that baby to the part of yourself that's calm. Soothe her if you want, but keep narrating. The baby's panicking. It's okay. She's a baby. Oh, she's relaxing. Oh, she's panicking again. It'll feel weird not to be striving toward anything, but don't judge yourself. That's like slapping the baby. You're a loving person, so I bet you'll have a quick learning curve. Kate, I'm not so sure, but I trust you. Martha, baby, I believe you're going to ace this assignment. Let's move now to the Let's Eat section of the magazine. And we have a big picture of lots of different varieties of green and yellow squash and a few of the blossoms as well. And you know, they're deep, almost a sunflower yellow color. Singular sensation, a delicious celebration of one standout ingredient, This month, succulent summer squash. Why we love it. Fall and winter get most of the squash glory, but summer varieties deserve their moment in the sun. The tender-fleshed, soft-skinned, golden green types that crop up from June through August are easy to prep and effortlessly lighten dishes like pizza and pasta. No matter what shape or color your squash takes, from zucchini to crookneck, it's a menu must. And here are a few tips. To minimize mushiness, remove some of your cut squash's water content by salting it 15 minutes before cooking, then blotting with paper towels. Yellow or golden zucchini is tubular like its green equivalent, but a tad sweeter. Yellow squash, which has a fatter bottom and a tapered neck, offers a slightly nuttier flavor. Choose squash that's no more than 8 inches long. Larger ones tend to be more bitter. And don't let patty pan squash's odd shape scare you. It's interchangeable in most summer squash recipes. And they have a little drawing here, and the patty pan squash is, almost like an onion, really. And they show it here in greens and oranges and yellows. So now we've got a couple of recipes. The first one is summer veggie tart. This makes 4 servings with an active time of 25 minutes and a total time of 1 hour and 5 minutes. And here are the ingredients. 1 tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon extra virgin olive oil divided. 1 garlic clove crushed. 1 small red onion finely chopped. 1 large red bell pepper finely chopped. 1/4 teaspoon of kosher salt divided. 1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper divided. 4 ounces of cream cheese softened. 1/4 cup basil leaves finely chopped, plus more for garnish. 1 small, about 4 ounce or 4 inch long zucchini trimmed. 1 small, about 4 ounce or 4 inch long yellow squash trimmed. 1 9-inch ready to unroll pie crust defrosted. Preheat oven to 425 degrees. In a large skillet over medium-high heat, heat 1 tablespoon of oil. Add garlic and cook, stirring for 30 seconds. Add onion, bell pepper, and 1/8 teaspoon each of salt and pepper. Cook until softened and browned, stirring frequently about 4 minutes. Remove from heat and let cool to room temperature. Meanwhile, combine cream cheese, basil, and 1/8 teaspoon each of salt and pepper. Stir until well mixed. Using a vegetable peeler, peel squashes lengthwise into thin ribbons, turning when you hit the seeds. Lay the pie crust flat on a jelly roll pan or a pie plate. Spread cream cheese mixture in an even layer, leaving a 1-inch border. Over the cream cheese, spread onion pepper mixture. On top, decoratively arrange zucchini and squash ribbons. And what they've done here is they've laid them out in strips, almost like a basket weave. Fold border of dough over vegetable mixture. Brush remaining 1 teaspoon of oil over the squashes. Bake until browned, 30 to 35 minutes. And serve warm or at room temperature. And now, good to know, if you're serving this dish at a summer gathering, you can prepare the recipe through the part where you combine the cream cheese and lay the squash peels lengthwise for up to 2 days in advance. And that cuts down on your pre-party stress. Now, the next recipe is pappardelle with zucchini and feta. This makes 4 servings with a total time of 20 minutes. Here are the ingredients. Kosher salt to taste. 1/2 pound of pappardelle or other wide noodle. 1 large, about 10 ounce or 8 inch long zucchini. 4 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 3 tablespoons of lemon juice, 3 teaspoons of lemon zest, 2 teaspoons of honey, 1 large shallot minced, 1/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, ground black pepper to taste, 4 ounces of feta crumbled, and 1/4 cup of parsley leaves. Now here are the instructions. Over high heat, bring a large pot of salted water to a boil. Add pasta and cook according to package directions. Drain and set aside. Meanwhile, using a vegetable peeler, slice zucchini into long, thin planks, then into approximately half-inch wide noodle shapes. Next, in a large bowl, whisk together oil, lemon juice and zest, honey, shallot, and red pepper flakes. Season with salt and pepper to taste. Add the cooked pasta and the zucchini, then toss well to coat. Stir in feta and parsley. Serve warm or chilled. And the way they've shown this here on a big white pasta bowl, the zucchini and the pasta are in ribbons, so they're nicely folded. And then we have the parsley leaves sprinkled around with the red flakes and the feta. Let's move now to the reading room and finish this up for the month. And this review is called Practically Magic. In a rare interview, Ann Tyler shares her tricks of the trade. For half a century, Ann Tyler has been writing exquisite novels whose characters, all ordinary people, rarely venture far from home, yet feel as exotic as time travelers. Her latest, Clock Dance, is primarily the story of Willa, her childhood, her marriages, and most poignantly, how she grapples with the emptiness of a life not quite lived in full. O Books editor Lee Haber sat down with the author of 21 novels, including Pulitzer Prize-winning Breathing Lessons, to learn more about how she spins the dross into gold. Lee, the page is blank and you're starting a new book. How do you begin? Anne, I think, well, I feel like writing about a man this time. Or, I'm sick of first person, let me try a different point of view. It could be that I overhear a couple arguing and am intrigued. It's like moving puppets around. Lee, and something kicks in? And yes, early on, it's very engineered. Then I allow the book to happen. Lee, you still write longhand, right? And when I use a pen, it's as if something flows through my fingers to the paper. They're my words. When I finally type it into the computer and print it out, I glide too easily over mistakes or lies, which is how I think of them. Writing longhand, I can feel, oh, I didn't tell the truth there. I wasn't being authentic. Lee, do you ever get stuck? And, of course, and when I do, I look to a quote that hangs over my desk by the poet Richard Wilbur. Quote, step off assuredly into the blank of your mind. Something will come to you. End of quote. Lee, in Clock Dance, we first meet Willa as a little girl. The novel next jumps to her college years, then to Willa in her 40s. And originally, I had a different character opening the book and was going to weave in Willa's childhood using flashbacks, but I thought, no, that's cheating. So I started with Willa, but I didn't want people to have to go through every moment of her life. That would be dull. So I can bypass all the stuff we really do know and trust my readers to figure out what's in the middle. Lee, do you prefer writing, description, or dialogue? And I love dialogue. It's like I'm taking dictation and being constantly surprised by what my characters say. But between their spoken lines, I have to get them from one room to another and remember that no one's had lunch yet and they can't throw their arms around a person because they're holding a glass of iced tea. Lee, even if it's as simple as Willa's father making her grilled cheese, you write those nuts and bolts as if you relish them. And I'm bored to death writing those things, so I try to snag one tiny detail that will keep me interested, and therefore, I hope the reader. Lee, at one point, the narrator says this about Willa, quote, behind her adult face, a child about 11 years old was still gazing out at the world, end of quote. I think that's true of many of your characters. Is it true of you? And absolutely. In fact, age 7 would be more accurate. But no one believes me when I tell them that every wise decision I've made, the sense of myself I have, came when I was 7. Lee. After Willa experiences a devastating loss, her father suggests she break the days into moments to deal with her grief. Anne. When my husband died more than 20 years ago, I remember wondering, how will I get through the rest of my life? I decided not to think about that, but to just have a cup of coffee. The coffee tasted good. It was a nice day. Bit by bit, the years went by. That's what I wanted for Willa. And now, our next review is entitled Fact and Fiction. During her nearly 40-year career at the New York Times, Machiko Kakutani, the paper's Pulitzer Prize-winning former chief book critic, earned a fearsome reputation for toughness. Author Nicholson Baker once compared a thumbs down from her to, quote, having your liver taken out without anesthesia, end of quote. The surgical metaphor is apt. Kakutani's take, whether yay or nay, was always penetrating and precise. Now the reviewer employs the same incisiveness in her own book, The Death of Truth. A compact yet expansive treatise on political disinformation, it dissects the current administration's dubious relationship with facts and, quote, preference for loyalty in ideological lockstep over knowledge, end of quote. But death dazzles most when Kakutani gleans lessons from literature to comprehend our times. Works as disparate as 1984 and Fates and Furies illuminates the blurred line between what's real and made up. Like characters from a Pynchon novel, Kakutani notes, we may suffer from, quote, spiritual vertigo amid the information overload, which makes this clear-eyed exegesis all the more invaluable. And we have one last little bit in the reading room, and this is under the heading, A Fork in the Road. Before he became an esteemed fiction writer, Rick Bass settled for just being near the authors he venerated, hoping something would rub off. Most thrillingly, in his 20s, he went to Jackson, Mississippi to apply for a job cutting Eudora Welty's lawn. He didn't get the gig, but stayed anyway. Soon after, his first story ran in the Paris Review. Over the next 3 decades, Bass published some 30 books, and became, quote, a literary titan, end of quote, says the New York Times. Still, at 55, after a divorce that left him reeling, he lost his hunger for art and stopped writing. To rekindle the spark, he reached back to his roots, setting out once more to become a student, quote, who will benefit from seeing an elder, end of quote. The book, The Traveling Feast, chronicles that odyssey. Driving from Montana's Yaak Valley to commune with the great ones, among them Lori Moore, David Sedaris, Tom McGuinn, and Joyce Carol Oates, Bass visited those who, quote, lit the way, end of quote, drinking wine, breaking bread, talking craft. The cure took, and this soul-satisfying book is the proof. Back at his desk, he wrote, quote, work, as it always has, awaits, end of quote. Let's move over now to Love That, the Gene Therapy Session, Adam's Denim Guide. Ready to find your new faves? Oh, creative director Adam Glassman helps you expand your gene pool with the coolest cuts, trends, technology, washes, and more. And we heard descriptions of about half of the denim guide in the last installment. So now let's dig into some more fashion advice and denim finds from Adam. Now here's a trend alert. Denim diamonds and pearls, oh my. Get your glam on with a little or a lot of sparkle and shine. And we have about half a dozen items here that have studs and sparkles on them. First off is a pair of black washed jeans. So they've got the faded patches that run from the knee up to the crease just below the pocket when you sit down. And they have these sort of random studs on them. They're kind of a traditional five pocket crop jean, and they are $118, and they're from Mavi, M-A-V-I.com. Next, from Lane Bryant, we have a classic denim jacket. This one's been washed so that it's kind of faded looking, and the hem at the waist has been, you know, ripped off, so it's kind of frayed. And it has studs on the yoke above, you know, that's above the pockets and up to the shoulders on both sides. So that's $120 from Lane Bryant. And next, for $20 at select Burlington stores, we have a very faded pair of boyfriend jeans here. Very faded, kind of light indigo. And they've got the cuff turned up, rolled up. And they have the studs that are just running from the cuff to below the knee. So there are lots of random studs there. From Topshop, for $150, there's a pair of jeans here in sort of a medium washed blue. It almost looks like, it's a little hard to tell, but almost like it has a little geometric pattern to it. It's your classic five pocket. The legs are almost trouser-like. They're a little wide and they're straight. And then there are random little diamond-like studs on them. And next we have an interesting combination. It's a blazer from veronicabeard.com. It's your classic notched collar, a little bit of a wide lapel, flat pockets right at the waistline. I believe this might be one button with a little bit of a cutaway at the front. Indigo woven, maybe it's a linen blazer, and it has a dickie with it. And the dickie looks like a denim shirt, a heavy denim shirt that has a hem just like a denim jacket does, right at the waist. And so it's got the studs for the buttons, and then the seams on the front of the denim jacket dickie are lined with studs. So it's very pre-washed, worn-looking with these diamond-like studs on it. The blazer is $595, and the dickie is $298. And finally, we have a slide, a sandal from VinceCamuto.com, and it's $110. Little one-inch stack heel, denim, that crisscross, that wide crisscross, and the crisscrosses are denim frayed on the edges, and the top cross has big studs, the diamond-like and aquamarine-like, and then little metal studs in between. And next we have Soften Up. Meet your new cozy pants. They're so comfortable and stretchy, you may forget that you're wearing denim. Again, from Mavi, M-A-V-I.com, we have a $98 pair of, you know, your classic five-pocket, narrow, kind of cut narrow at the ankle, pre-washed, so it's a real medium blue, washed on the thighs and then where your hands would be going in and out of the pockets all the time, and then the horizontal creases across the front of the jeans at the zipper. And then next, from American Eagle, for $40, we have a similar pair, a little bit skinnier, medium blue, washed. And from Spanx, these are just like leggings. These are $128. And they are not quite as washed looking, a little darker indigo with all the gold top stitching and a nice wide 2.5-inch elastic waist. The next item here is called Business and Casual, and we have about a dozen items here that have been sort of, it's sort of a wardrobe that Adam has designed for us. And it starts out with off-white jeans. Your wardrobe must have off-white jeans that transition seamlessly from office to off-duty and summer to fall. So coming in sizes up to 24W from Bandolino, $59 at Amazon.com/fashion, classic, five-pocket, off-white jeans. Above that is a blazer from Chico's.com for $129, and it's navy blue with red and bright sort of sunflower yellow stripe in it. It's a notched collar blazer with some studs on the lapels. And then there's a button-down Derek Lamb 10 Crosby shirt that is white with maroon stripes. So they're kind of bold stripes, deep cuffs, and it has a tie so that you can wear, it has a tie belt, if you will, so that you can wear this button-down shirt out over the jeans, and it's out of the same fabric. So that's $225 from Derek Lamb, crisp white with maroon stripes on it. There's a little ballet flat from Margoty.com for $195, and this little ballet flat is in a natural linen with a little tie right at the top of the shoe and a little half-inch wooden heel. And still in that linen look, we have a tote from Mark and Graham. It's $279. It's a nice, generous, rectangular, deep tote with mid-tan leather handles and a tassel. Now we have a light tan belt bag for $138 from hobobags.com. And so it's a nice little rectangular bag on a belt, so you can wear it around your waist. It has this long tassel from the zipper that zips across the bag, and then it has this nice little slip stitch out of leather all around the edge of the bag. And we have a moto jacket in a nice soft mid-tan. It's $60 at Old Navy, so it's got that little asymmetrical zip, and it's a little bit short at the waist, and the nice inset pockets on the front. And they show it with a white turtleneck from DKNY, which is $69. Aviator sunglasses from Ray-Ban.com for $198. They have brass across the top of the glasses and for the temple pieces. And the lenses are a gradient with kind of a medium brown to a clear. And those, I said, are $198. Then from Minnetonka, we have a little booty for $70. And this is a nice flat little booty, comes up to the ankle with leather fringe that wraps around the ankle and has a nice little leather tie. And then it has sort of a blanket weave look, colorful top to the shoe. So it's got some reds and blues and browns in it. And we have a couple more items in this business and casual that's all centered around these off-white jeans. A very worn-in looking khaki shirt that has been hand embellished with beads. So there's a beading pattern on the pocket, and then there's a symbol over on the other side of the front, and then on the sleeves, and they show the sleeves rolled up, a little bit of detail on the collar, but it's just a classic shirt. This is $1,890 at Feig Studio, New York City. And to top it all off, we have from Anne Klein for $65, a watch, and it has a gold bezel but an off-white front face, and it's really large with a Roman numeral 12 and then just a single gold-looking hash for each of the hours. And then the gold band has an ivory inset through the middle of the stretchy band. So that's at Amazon.com fashion. And now in a special features section of the magazine, we have some beauty advice on eyebrows under the heading Brows That Wow. If you're like 99.9% of women, there's been a time when you've looked in the mirror and wished that your fill-in-the-blank was a little smoother or your fill-in-the-blank looked just a tad smaller. Maybe you've even considered going under the knife. But why nip and tuck when you can trim and pluck? The right eyebrow shape can transform your face dramatically. Brow maestro Robert Gabriel, owner of Gabriel's Brow Boutique in New York City, shows four women how it's done. Under the heading Elevate Droopy Eyelids, we have Juliette Brinker, who says, "Most days I'm up at 3 a.m. to go to work." Juliette is a nursery specialist for Lowe's. This early bird schedule and natural aging may have left her eyes a little saggy. Defined brows can make a huge difference. And in the before picture, her hair is just kind of pulled straight back. It's a dark brown, and it just sort of brushes her shoulders. And it's not real full hair, but she's got sort of high cheekbones, brown eyes, and her eyebrows are just a little thicker when they get close to the nose. So they're almost like an apostrophe or a comma, where it's got almost that little circle bit before it curls and gets thinner. And the after picture, of course, she's made up. They've pulled her hair not straight from the center of her forehead, but a little bit from the left side. And they've shaped her brows so that they're a little more tapered and even without that sort of extra thickness close to the nose. And she's got these really nice kind of coral colors and little golden highlights on her eyelids and, you know, of course, nice mascara and this coral lipstick. The issue, the position of Brinker's brows just below the orbital bone and sloping southward wasn't doing her lids any favors. Gabriel says, quote, "This really brought down her entire eye area and demeanor," end of quote. An uneven shape, very thick at the beginning, thin towards the ends, only exacerbated the effect. Gabriel goes on to say, quote, "We needed to get everything moving in an upward direction," end of quote. The update. First, Gabriel tinted the tiny, nearly invisible hairs around Brinker's brows. He had to isolate and trim a few stubborn grays that resisted the dye. He then waxed to remove some of the hairs along the bottom of her brows, creating a more sloped arch and lifting the tails, the ends of the brows near the outer corners of the eyes. He says, quote, "This defined and opened up Juliette's eye area to give her a fresher look," end of quote. Because Brinker's hairs naturally grow in a downward direction, Gabriel also filled in the bottoms with a penciled, brushed up with a spoolie, and applied some clear brow gel. He said, quote, "This lifted the hairs and held them in place," end of quote. The verdict? Brinker says, "I love my brows. It was wonderful to have them done professionally. Now, let's party." And under the heading Brow 101, tinting gives wimpy brows more presence. Gabriel says, quote, "It should generally last up to 4 weeks before touch-ups are needed." And next we have, get a no-scalpel facelift. Rosa Curry is starting to notice that her face looks a little drawn along the jawline. Fuller brows to the rescue. And the before picture, this African-American woman has short hair, which is tapered kind of close to the back of her neck at the nape and gets longer and is pulled away from her face. So it's longer above her forehead. And the picture they show of her here, she has her full lips have no lipstick and her brows are very thin. The issue, 4 years ago, Curry realized her brows were beginning to thin at both the fronts and the ends, the result, a visual narrowing of the face, especially due to the brows' shorter tails, Gabriel says. Curry is a prime candidate for microblading, in which a semi-permanent dye is deposited in the skin of the brow area. But for now, Gabriel worked his magic with filling and shaping. The update. To create brows where there were nearly none, Gabriel tinted to give Curry a fuller look and also used waxed to round her arches. The key to her transformation, though, was repositioning her tails slightly above her brow bones and tapering them. Gabriel says, quote, "This lifted Rosie's entire face and made her look more youthful," end of quote. Finally, it was time to fill. Gabriel used a pencil to draw short, wispy lines along the bottom of Curry's brows, brushing through with a spoolie to blend the product with the hairs. Of her new brows, she says, quote, "They add flair to my face," end of quote. And in the nice big picture of her made up with her new brows, she looks much younger. Again, they've used a little bit darker coral tone for her blusher and her lipstick. And they've used deep, sort of deep gold and browns on her eyelids. And then she's got a really lovely arch to her eyebrows, and she's smiling really big. Brow 101, here's another tip. The outer part of your brow, called the tail, should end at a 45-degree angle to your pupil. The next one is called Play with Proportions. Madison Stratton wanted to de-emphasize her forehead. Gabriel says, quote, "She's very attractive. A few brow tweaks will merely enhance that," end of quote. And the close-up of the after shot, when you turn the page, it almost looks like Kate Middleton. And the before picture, her medium brown hair is pulled just straight back from her forehead, and her brows are a little wide set, if you will. So the thickest part of the brows, there's a little bit, I'll say too much distance between them above her nose. And so the issue. Stratton, also a good candidate for microblading, is afraid to do much to her sparse brows. She says, quote, "I just fill with a little pencil and that's it. I worry that if I do much plucking on my own, that look like tadpoles," end of quote. In truth, she could lose a little hair, but strategically. The update. Gabriel's goal was to visually raise Stratton's brows. To accomplish this, he tinted them to bring out the tails, the thinnest part. Gabriel says, quote, "That's generally where fading begins," end of quote. He then reshaped them with wax, being careful not to take too many hairs off the top. He also waxed a bit here and there to give Stratton sharper arches and got her asymmetrical brows on the same level. So what she has ended up with is a very tapered brow. And in the up-close picture, you can see that some tinting has been added to the skin. So the effect is you think you're looking at brow or shadow of brow, but there's a little bit of tinting on the skin, and then you have the little hairs of the brow sort of completing it. And here in Brow 101, for the most flattering look, the space between your brows should be about as wide as the bridge of your nose, not your nostrils. And Madison's light complexion is flattered by kind of a pinky coral lipstick, pale lipstick, and that same tone and her blusher and her pale blue eyes. And again, that sort of same tone used even in her eyeshadow. So we have one more example here, and this one is called Rebalance Your Features. And the before picture shows Simra, our final candidate here, with curly cropped hair that just barely touches her shoulders, and it's a little, it's got that sort of unkempt look, and it's pulled straight away from her face, and her brows are a little bit heavy, and she's kind of got dark circles under her eyes as well. Simra Karamichi's nose was overshadowing the rest of her face. When one feature dominates, Gabriel says, well-shaped brows can subtly divert attention. The issue, according to Gabriel, quote, because her brows were so long, they eclipsed her beautiful eyes, end of quote. His goal was to draw attention to them. Karamichi has what Gabriel dubs caterpillar brows, fuzzy with no defined edges. He says, quote, to bring focus to the area, they need to be sharp and distinct, end of quote. Length was another concern. It was time to get things in shape. The update. To fill in uneven spots essential to giving Karamichi high-impact brows, Gabriel again began by tinting the entire area. Gabriel says, quote, it created more contrast with the rest of her skin, which made the brows more pronounced, end of quote. The next step was cleaning up the edges and trimming back the heads and tails. Gabriel kept Karamichi's arches rounded but tapered the tails, creating the perfect frame for her hazel eyes. She was thrilled with the results. She says, quote, I love my new brows. I didn't realize they could look this good. I'm definitely going to keep it up. Simra has more of a medium complexion, and her hair has been brushed out and smooth. Again, though, it's kind of pulled away from her face and falls around her shoulders. And they've got her in this nice sort of pink blush sparkly top. And that same sort of pink blush lipstick. And they've evened out all of her skin tones with a little bit lighter color foundation to minimize the circles under the eyes. And they've used this light color, just a shade or two darker on her eyes, on her eyelids, complementing her hazel eyes. And her brows, while still not quite as thin as the other examples we've seen, are much more tamed, if you will. So it's still very much a natural look, but tamed. And our final bit of advice, Brow 101, choose a taupe or beige pencil to fill in sparse brows. Gabriel says, quote, it gives you more flexibility because you can start light and go darker if you want to. Coat the hairs, not just the skin, and brush the color through afterward, end of quote. Let's go now to the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, and we have some short articles here. And first one is under the heading, We Like This Guy, Grace Under Fire. When his community went up in smoke, Gregory Roberts gathered the embers to help remember. A week after catastrophic wildfires devastated Northern California last October, the orange glow lingering around Gregory Roberts' house in Santa Rosa, where at least 3,000 structures were destroyed, had given way to a cloud of snow-like ash. It was apocalyptic, says the 50-year-old ceramist and Sonoma State University professor of studio art. And he goes on to say, and it was very depressing. As Roberts cast about for a project that might help him break through his funk, it came to him. Out of the literal ashes could rise art. Thus began the Sonoma Ash Project. Roberts invited members of the community to bring him scoopfuls of cinders from their lost dwellings so that each sample could be sifted and used in a pottery glaze. The finishes, quote, because every sample of ash is different, every glaze will be different, end of quote, will coat the insides of hand-thrown porcelain pots Roberts models on the Fountain Grove Round Barn, a beloved local landmark also wiped out by the blaze. Though ash has been used in ceramics since the end of the Stone Age, Roberts had some trepidation about this particular application. He says, quote, how do you walk up to someone whose life has just been reduced to what's basically potassium and ask, can I borrow this, end of quote. But within 30 days, 95 bags and bottles of ash had made their way to his doorstep, some with just a name and address, others with heartbreaking notes attached. A husband and wife accepting the loss of their home for 40 years. A pet lover gathering ash from the spot where she'd kept the remains of her four dogs. He's received 138 samples to date and is still accepting more. He goes on to say, quote, "This isn't a project where I can say, sorry, you missed the deadline," end of quote. The completed pots, memorials really, will be unveiled in October when an exhibit marking the anniversary of the fires opens at the museums of Sonoma County. Robert says, quote, "I've always dreamed of becoming a village potter, like a blacksmith, someone in a community who feels a real need. Maybe this is my chance," end of quote. And there's an example here of the round barn made into a pot. So it is just a little bit of an uneven, short cylinder with a tapered lid with just a little sort of knob on the top. And that is shown a picture of Roberts in a aqua gingham shirt, a little red plaid bow tie, and a suit jacket. He's a balding fellow with a goatee. And then there's a picture of a little mason jar filled with the ash. And it says, "From our home," and it has the street address. And then there's also a handwritten note with a photograph of a young family on it. And next, under OLibs, we have Yvonne Orji. Oh, maybe I've said that wrong. O-R-J-I. The quick-witted actress who plays Molly in HBO's Insecure, returning for season 3 on August 12th, takes care of her spirit and tries not to slobber. And there's a great picture of her here wearing a black leather camisole. She's an African-American woman, and her hair is parted in the middle. It's this real smooth bob that is cut off in this nice sort of right below her chin, so it's got that nice curve to it, and she's smiling, and her lips are in this deep claret wine color. And then there's a picture of her with her friend and Insecure co-star Issa Rae below that, and they're both smiling. And now we have a few items from Yvonne. "My most prized possession is," and she says, "my Bible. I've had it since I became a born-again Christian in college. It's all marked up with notes and the pages are falling out, but I know exactly where they go. My childhood nickname was Thunder Thighs. I had really thick thighs. If I had one superpower, I'd be a super therapist. I'd sit all the world's villains down and get to the root of their problems. I don't think anyone is born bad. They just need someone to talk to. Or maybe they weren't hugged enough. My funniest flaw is drooling while I sleep. When I fly, I have to make sure I don't slobber on strangers. And finally, the title of my current life chapter is I Just Got My Things Yesterday. 2 years ago, I was very acclimated to poverty. Now I have to remind myself that I can actually have things. I remember hearing about how Oprah went to get a Bentley once and Gail told her she should ask for a discount. I'm the Gail in that situation. You can still get a discount." And still in Live Your Best Life, under Second Act, we have the heading Head Over Heels, how Kat Mendenhall two-stepped into a new career. And we have Kat with her cowboy hat, white shirt, jeans, and cowboy boots. And there are other pairs of cowboy boots pictured around her. For native Texan Kat Mendenhall, cowboy boots are more than footwear. Like country music and saying y'all, they're a cornerstone of her heritage. At one point, her closet held 26 pairs. Mendenhall, 52, wore them to dinner. her daughter's high school graduation. Those were more ornate, she says. And for 25-plus years, her various jobs in telecommunications sales. But in 2010, hoping to correct digestive problems, she rocked her own world by going vegan. And it would only be a matter of time before the leather boots bit the dust. Before she quit Cowhide, however, in 2013, the Dallasite decided to quit her job. Mendenhall says, quote, "Going vegan really made me feel a need to be purposeful. It was hard giving up a lucrative career, but I had about 3 years worth of resources. What I didn't have was a plan," end of quote. A few months later, she was driving behind a cattle trailer and voila. Quote, "I made eye contact with a cow and felt a punch in my gut. I'd stopped eating animals, but I still wore them. I told a friend, this is shallow, but I don't know what I'm going to do without my boots. She looked at me and said, make vegan ones." End of quote. Mendenhall's big challenge, sourcing a material that could mimic cowhide. Enter Magilite, a microfiber that shares leather's texture and durability. Her bigger challenge? Finding an old-school bootmaker who'd handle a non-traditional textile. Enter Tommaso Arditi, an El Paso craftsman. Mendenhall says, quote, "When Tommaso sent me the first prototype, I literally fell to the floor and cried," end of quote. Since launching her eponymous line in 2015, Mendenhall has designed and sold more than 130 sets of bespoke boots at about $500 a pop. Her clients have some famous names and some not so famous, such as James Moss, her 81-year-old dad who wears his size 16s to church. She's even made a few pairs to kick off her new personal collection. Says Mendenhall, quote, "I just wanted to change the world without changing my style," end of quote. Yeehaw. Let's close out this installment with some comments made to the Let's Talk section of Oprah Magazine. And here we go. Extra, extra. June's big question had our followers looking on the bright side. The question was, are you ready for some good news? And one of them filled us with hope. At Pip Squeaker writes, "There's good news everywhere we look. Collectively, we've been through worse and have risen to stand another day. We will persist, flaws and all." And in response to the article, "You Can Go Your Own Way" about traveling solo, we have at Building to Rebuild this comment. "I had to forget the fear, just dive in and go to LA for the Ultimate Women's Expo." And another comment here, "I do it every year for my birthday." We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.